We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain-sensing headband that helps you meditate, and five-star app Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus, your host, along with my co-host this week, Muse co-founder Ariel Garten. Before we get started, a reminder to check out our free meditations on Muse or Meditation Studio. And if you and your family want to learn to meditate while you're at home or just deepen your practice, use the discount code MUSESTRESSLESS for your Muse headband at choosemuse.com. We're thinking of all of you and wishing you the very best. Now on to today's episode with Ariel.
Today, we're going inside the head of young Pueblo, aka Diego Perez. He's a writer, poet, and activist who explores his own mind to create poems about the mind. His poems are meditations in themselves and often talk about meditation teachings directly. He is also Instagram famous, with 329,000 millennial followers who receive his simple visual poems about meditation daily in their feed. Welcome, young Pueblo.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. And yeah, I'm looking forward to a wonderful conversation.
Awesome. So let's just start and dive right in, because most people are probably curious about the first thing they heard, young Pueblo. Like, who is this young Pueblo guy? Now we get to meet the guy behind young Pueblo. Tell us about young Pueblo and how that came about.
Yeah, young Pueblo was a name that came to me a bunch of years ago. I would say back sometime in 2013, I think the name came to me. And then over time, it really developed a meaning. Around 2014, 2015, I realized that I wanted to take writing seriously, because it was around the time where I saw that meditation was having a real effect in my life. I did my first meditation course back in July of 2012. And after doing a few silent 10-day Vipassana courses, I realized that a lot of the burden that was sort of limiting my mind in regards to anxiety, sadness were decreasing. You know, they weren't totally eradicated, but they were decreasing. And I was noticing that I was really feeling a lot better. And I felt like I had more choices in my mind. I felt like I could see the world a little more clearly, and that I could navigate my own actions in a way that was much more productive to my personal happiness. So it sort of pushed me into wanting to write, to even let people know that healing yourself was actually a real possibility. Because to me, I didn't know that for myself. You know, I kind of went into meditation as an experiment, just because I was always kind of curious about it. And it felt like the right fit. So I didn't really know that that's what I was going to get out. I think I knew that I was going to learn a bunch of things, but I didn't know that I was actually going to feel better. And it wasn't until after, you know, delving deeper into the process, into the actual practice, I started seeing that, yeah, I feel loads better. So that sort of pushed me into writing. And the idea of young Pueblo kind of really formulated around my understanding of the world, that we are all very young collectively. If you take all of humanity, we're all very young. You know, it doesn't matter if you're 90 years old. If you take us as a whole giant collective, we have so much to learn. Because if you examine us from the lens of when we were little children, when we went to school, we were trying to learn the simplest things. Our teachers were really trying to get us to not hurt each other, to tell the truth, to be kind to one another, and to generally just, you know, to even like clean up after yourself. Things that seem so simple that we can do as individuals, but as a human collective, we don't know how to do these things at all. So to me, young Pueblo is sort of the signal that we have a lot of growing up to do as a humanity. And I think a lot of that growing up is going to happen during the century, where we have so many big challenges ahead of us that will, you know, hopefully help us grow. And I think that this sort of big renaissance, I would call it, that's happening around the mind, is going to be a big, big part of helping humanity mature.
So that's a really helpful perspective. So as somebody who has a two-year-old myself, I spend a lot of time teaching him some very, very basic things like hitting is bad, say right. I'm sorry. And some days he's amazing at it. And some days he just gets overwrought by his own emotions and his own desires, and hitting is bad goes out the window. And it's interesting to look at our humanity as being in a very similar place, that there are these lessons that we've learned over and over again in our childhood, yet they're returning in the adulthood of the individual, but still the sort of childhood of the collective humanity.
Exactly. Beautiful point. Yeah.
Where do you see our evolution going? And what do you think the path down that road is?
I think it's interesting because people have very different aspirations. So I wouldn't want to try to say, like, you know, all human existence is going in this one direction. But I would say that to get to a place where we're not harming one another, where we, like, pretty fundamentally feel within ourselves that harming another is harming oneself, it doesn't take too much work, right? Having that understanding that, you know, it's literally to my benefit to not harm you is very different from, let's say, like, total liberation or enlightenment. I think that's actually a very easier to accomplish. And I think that's where we're really heading as a humanity in our evolution, that we're trying to sort of lift ourselves up into that understanding that, oh, right, it's not to my benefit at all to harm you in any way. It actually helps my personal life to support you in your freedom, in your safety, et cetera, so forth. So to me, I like to think about it in the immediate future being like the next 100 years, not like the whole future saga of humanity, but it really is trying to get ourselves to that point where more and more of us as individuals can, you know, because that's an idea that we've had throughout all of human history, but having an idea intellectually is very different from being able to experience it deep within yourself, but deeply being able to feel that, you know, that it's to your benefit to not harm others. I think through these different practices, because, you know, so many different people are engaging with different introspective mediums, you know, including meditation, that will help get us there to that point where it's like, oh, right. Now, of course, like, not only do I know this in my mind, but I feel this in my body and know I'm going to find better solutions than harm. So
it's an incredibly simple concept, yet we still have difficulty grasping it. Just don't hurt somebody else. When you hurt somebody else, it hurts yourself and it hurts the whole system. It seems so incredibly straightforward. And if you ask any rational human being, you know, would you hurt somebody else? The answer is no, I wouldn't do that. Of course, I'm an evolved being, or I am a person. Yet we see these examples over and over and over again, you know, particularly in this political climate where we are simply hurting one another for our own gain. We're creating fear for our own gain, or we get caught in these little, you know, micro experiences where you think you're right and the other person isn't, and therefore you inadvertently hurt them. So it may not even be so overt. You know, what do you see the pathway of as being to move us forward and beyond this, when particularly in America, we seem so mired and still hurting one another?
I think a profound understanding of the mind would be really helpful when I interact with people in real life, you know, outside of Instagram. What I like to talk about the most is how we really carry an emotional history, you know, something that's so heavily patterned into us. Literally all the different moments that we've felt very intense emotions, they accumulate within us and they sort of set us up to feeling those same emotions over and over and reacting to reality in the same way. So a lot of times we feel like, you know, we don't even have a choice as to how to go about things. And, you know, going back to our conversation, it feels that, you know, something as simple as, you know, not harming another person becomes so difficult because when we try to, our old patterns, literally our past, is pushing against our present so that we recreate the past instead of trying something new. Even though we literally know better, we can't, because we're so heavily patterned into being a certain way. And I think that's what's so special about now that we have all these different tools that can actually open up a new possibility, you know, of literally, you know, how do we get there? Well, it's literally being able to be with yourself through some technique or practice that can help you sort of unlock the subconscious where all those patterns are dwelling and start releasing them. And I think that's what's really exciting about now is because, you know, I think for so many different generations, people have really wanted to change the world. But I think now we have the tools to not only change the world, but to profoundly change ourselves. And that's going to help expedite the process in a way that, you know, is just brand new.
And I guess you play a slightly unique role in this, allowing people to discover these tools. So, you know, as one of the people who generates these tools as well, you were so excited about people in the world to encounter these tools and to use these tools and to recognize that you can use meditation to make your life better. And people are just starting to kind of get it or encounter meditation for the first time. And you have a kind of unique delivery system that delivers little pearls of meditative wisdom to 330,000, probably primarily millennials, who get it in their inbox. How did this sort of evolve? Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, we live in a time where the attention span is so short, right? There, you know, there are so many different wonderful books. And I really feel like a lot of the themes that are out there, especially in the spiritual world, they're not necessarily new, right? They've been around for thousands of years. But what we can provide is a different perspective, right? My own experience of these themes within myself. And as I started going through that personal process and, you know, started literally going inward and releasing all the things that are limiting my happiness and my freedom and really dealing with that sort of that engine of craving that causes misery, a few things started becoming clearer. But I felt like I wanted to write and share, but I knew that it would be most beneficial if I did it through a minimalistic format. So I saw how, you know, everybody's hanging out on social media. Like literally that's become the medium where humanity literally talks to itself. And just, you
talks
know,
to itself, yes.
Yeah, and this giant conversation's happening. So I saw how so many beautiful poets, like I know in particular, Lang Lee, Ruby Kaur, and R.M. Drake were, you know, some of the people who were the first generation Instagram poets, and they were putting up such wonderful things about the human experience. And I started thinking, you know, they do it in such a beautiful format where they literally capture their poems in images and then just share them. And then people continue sharing them and they, you know, just keep flowing around the internet. So I thought, let me take my own ideas because, you know, it's one thing. I think it's important to understand that you can liberate yourself through your own direct experience. And that really has to do with your feeling, right? That's something else separate from thinking. But after we sort of have these profound experiences within ourselves, when we go away to meditate, another way of trying to understand what we really learned is to intellectualize them and integrate, you know, try to really be like, what was it that I felt? What did I really learn? So that's what I started sort of jotting down was, you know, intellectualizing my meditative experiences. And I was like, all right, let me try to, you know, put it out in the format of a poem or prose. And it's been exciting just seeing how a lot of people are on the same wave right now and are, you know, even beyond, like, though I may meditate Vipassana, there are so many people who meditate so many different forms of, you know, different forms of meditation, even outside of like Buddhist meditation, Vedic, who also relate to a similar message, because the reality is that the human mind, you know, where it's all, even though you and I have different contents in our mind, different experiences, the structure of our minds are the same. So there definitely is a universal experience there.
And I would say even for people who don't meditate and have no idea what Vipassana is, what you're writing resonates because it's all speaking about the shift in the human experience.
Yeah.
Let's actually turn to some of the poems. I'm going to open your Instagram here. And pull up some of my favorites.
So the poem reads, "She once believed that the damage to her mind and heart was permanent until she met wisdom, who taught her that no pain or wound is eternal, that all can be healed, and that love can grow even in the toughest parts of her being." Young Pueblo.
That's one of my favorite ones. There's two things I like about that poem. One is that when I write, you know, things will just come out a certain way. And I always felt that it kind of helps people to put themselves in the shoes of a poem. And I thought to myself, okay, well, there's this long history of patriarchy, so I don't really want to use the pronoun he. But I still wanted to maintain a universal, you know, it doesn't matter if you identify with the word she, it's almost like a challenge to everyone, any human being, you know, to see themselves in that word and see the universal in that. So I wanted to use the word she just to, you know, to just do a little bit to combat patriarchy and sort of push back on that. And I know it's not a perfect solution or anything like that, but that's definitely something I keep in mind is like, if I'm going to put out a personal poem like that, or something that I'm hoping people can see themselves inside of, then I'd rather use she than he and hope that all people can see themselves in that.
I can tell you it really resonated with me. You have a few poems that talk about the protagonist as a she.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
And when I read them, I was transformed just by the act of reading about someone who is a she. It's really powerful. I don't know what it feels like as a man, but as a woman, it is a surprise and it is a delight. And just the act of it being there cracks through something.
I think it's special too. And I feel like more people who identify as he are also seeing that there's no problem with it at all. You know, that they actually see themselves in the same poem, that it's not so much about the actual pronoun itself, but it's about the experience, if you relate to that experience. And that's what I was really hoping for, was just like the rising above identity, but also acknowledging that there is this long history of patriarchy. So many different, you know, texts, whether they're political or spiritual, have been forced around the word he, that, you know, it's like, why can't we not see the universal within the word she? But even beyond that, I love that poem because we talk about pain and healing as something that, you know, for some people, it seems like such a long road that it never ends. But yeah, one thing that I've come to fundamentally understand within myself is that everything arises and passes away. Like everything is changing so rapidly. And that's really the nature of the universe, is that things are constantly changing. So that means that even though we accumulated pain in the past, there is a way to let it go. It's just a matter of finding a way that really meets us where we're at and finding a practice that can really help us move forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of reference to the letting go in your work. So in that line, it was the, you know, the word that no pain or wound is eternal. Let me bring up another one here. It's a very simple one. Observe, accept, release, transform.
I love that one because it's, you know, when I meditate, it's essentially what I feel like, you know, that's the process that's happening as I'm observing. And then you just have to accept what's happening, you know, accept really means like an even deeper form of selfless observation, right? That you're not pushing back on it. And then eventually it releases and you change, you know, you change for the better. And I think that's what's interesting about really seriously taking on a meditation practice, is that you're literally taking your personal evolution into your own hands and you're deciding, okay, well, I want to grow in happiness, in joy. I want to feel less jealousy. I want to feel less hatred. And that's the direction that you move in, which is quite beautiful.
And your poem's a beautiful reminder and almost in a way serves as a mantra. I could hear myself saying over and over in my head, you know, observe, accept, release, transform. Observe, accept, release, transform.
Yeah, I think what's exciting about it too is that I think in some ways that poem sort of encapsulates just what any introspective practice would do. I think even if you go into like psychotherapy or even things like energy healing, you know, so many different healing modalities out there, But it's a similar process. You know, you're sort of quieting down your whole being so that things can come up for release. And then once the release happens, you change.
It's amazing how much we resist the release.
Yeah.
It's incredible how much we fight, how much we want to hold on to stuff that just doesn't serve us. But like, we feel like we need it because we've had it always, or we feel like it's protecting us, but it really doesn't.
And it makes sense because it's all we knew, you know, it's all, you know, so being able to go inward, like that requires an immense amount of courage. You know, you have to be willing to boldly go into the unknown because you don't know who you're going to be or what part of your conditioning that you're going to sort of allow to melt away and disintegrate so that you can feel freer, but you won't know who that person is. And I think the fun part of meditating is that, yeah, you know, you're moving in this direction that is towards greater happiness. But I personally feel like every time I come out of a course, I have to get to know myself again.
When you've gone into your own personal unknown and you found conditioning, what are some of the things that you found or things that you've discovered about yourself and released?
I think a lot of anxiety, a lot of sadness, like I mentioned before. I know that, and all of it is sort of underlied with, like it has this foundation of craving that's underneath it all, mm-hmm. that's sort of pushing, you know, craving to be safe, craving to be popular, craving to, like, you know, have more friends. You know, there's so many different cravings, and it's really the act of craving itself as opposed to the object. You know, craving will really grab onto whatever object the mind has available. But it's really just like all these different patterns that are pushing me away from the present into the future, into the past, or into my imagination. And it really is, you know, it's like an ocean. Like you dive in and there's literally so much. And it makes sense from what science is figuring out about the subconscious and how it's the vast majority of the mind. You know, it's like more than 90% of the mind is the subconscious. And in that subconscious is just heavily, heavily patterned reactions from the past. So a lot of it is just swimming through your own past, through your own emotions that you felt before, sometimes even feeling them again as they're arising to release. But a lot of it is just, you know, stories that I've made up.
which is ironic as a writer.
Yeah.
You're of course filled with stories that you made up. In a sense, yeah. That's where part of the pathway to liberation is. You can now make up a new set of stories and share them with people and choose the stories that you think will lead to liberation.
Mm. Yeah. And it's quite exciting because I think there's the difference between like the story that's sort of built on delusion versus a story that can potentially be helpful.
What are some of the stories that got you to this point? I mean, you've had a very interesting history as an activist, as somebody who comes from Latin America. Can you talk about some of those embedded stories in you and what might be shifting for you now?
Yeah, I was always sort of, you know, my identity, just like where I came from, how I grew up. I think being born in Ecuador, coming to this country as an immigrant when I was like about 4 years old, and just seeing that struggle that my family went through, you know, being impoverished and not having enough to go around sometimes. But also at the same time, having a lot of love from my mother and father, it just helped me see that the world could be better. I think even when I was a very little kid, things seemed out of balance. So I think that's been one of the big things that pushed me when I was younger to go into the world of organizing and activism, and to even see that we can actually reclaim our power on the more material level, like as human beings. But when I started meditating, things just really connected. And I saw that not only is liberation something that's material and external, but liberation is something, it has an internal dynamic.
Yeah.
And when you connect the two, they both move more smoothly. And I think, you know, I'm grateful for the experience and the struggles that I've had in the past, especially being poor, you know, because it was such a big struggle. But I think if I didn't have that experience, it would be so hard to have empathy for the, you know, billions and billions of people who are just so impoverished throughout the world. I think a lot of times, you know, people forget, like, I think there's about 60,000 to 80,000 people who die every day from hunger. And it's not because, you know, we have so much globally, we have so much, but we have a massive distribution problem. So these are things that I like to hold close to my heart and that, you know, help me just remember that we have a lot of work to do. And I think I try to position myself in this sense of psychology and spirituality and talk about these things and about the individual, because they're going to be fundamental into helping people think in more creative ways, to think in bolder ways, so that what once looked like such a solid problem that we would not tackle will switch over into an opportunity. You know, it's like, oh, wait, we can actually do more. Or now we have the courage to, let's say, no more of that and change this for the better.
Sorry, I'm actually a little overwhelmed. I got very stuck on the 60,000 people per day dying of hunger. And now I'm quite upset. And I'm just feeling my own reactions to that and feeling my own sadness arise. And I felt, I felt some amount of liberation as you talked about the ability to reframe the problem and be able to see it in new ways and turn problems into opportunities. So that, you know, promise of future afforded me some relief. The sensation has not moved through yet. Go ahead.
No, and I'm really grateful that you're being so honest about that, because it's a big one. And I think we have trouble, you know, imagining large numbers like that, even though we can just rattle them off. It's hard to really, you know, see that and feel that in the mind. I think that's why a lot of times when things happen in the media and some sort of calamity happens around on the other side of the world, we can more easily galvanize around it because it's a smaller number of people. But once the number gets too big, it almost, you know, we sort of like push it away and it doesn't become quite as real anymore. But one thing that I wanted to touch on from just listening to you, it's making me think that one of the major problems that we have as a humanity, it's literally a lack of courage and a lack of creativity. And that's one of the things that gets me really excited about the work that we can do with our minds, because once we start releasing these patterns that we've been talking about in the subconscious, one of the things that you immediately feel is that you start feeling more of your human nature, and that human nature carries love, and it also carries a massive amount of creativity and this new ability to problem solve, which to me is like what we're really missing inside of ourselves to be able to change the world in a big way. Because if you don't have solutions to the problems, then, you know, what are you going to really do? You're going to continue repeating the problem. And also, if you don't have courage to apply these solutions, then you're also going to continue repeating the past. But I think that's what's so special about now, is that when we use these tools and we start releasing the old, you know, we can start our creativity can just reach an absolute new height. And I, you know, even in my own personal life, like I had no idea that I was going to be a writer. And it was only when I started releasing a lot of these, you know, knots of the past that were tied up inside of me, was my mind clear enough to start, you know, writing little things forward. And then it just got longer and longer and, you know, clearer and clearer. And obviously I still have a long way to go, but, you know, so many of my friends as well have experienced that through writing, through their art, through in their jobs. They just can come up with so many more beautiful things than they ever have before once they start taking their healing seriously.
I got in a place that was very filled with fear for a while, and, you know, through rigorously applying meditation and looking at my fear and confronting it and managing it and letting it go away because it was just fear, an incredible amount of liberation came on the other side. And so when you say the word liberation, it has so much meaning, both in the physical liberation, you know, I am free, we live in a free country, and in the spiritual liberation. My family is Holocaust survivors. So, you know, the term liberation has been, you know, as well as somebody from Latin America, you know, that term liberation is highly loaded. You know, my grandparents came from somewhere where they were literally not free. They were not able to do what they want in life. And when my grandma arrived in the United States of America and saw the Statue of Liberty, like that was the greatest moment of her life. And anytime I'd go visit her, we'd have to go just look at the Statue of Liberty because it meant so much, you know, that freedom. And, you know, for me, taking that and internalizing it as the personal freedom that we can discover, and then the global freedom that arises when we all have personal freedom, when we are no longer driven by the fear, the anxiety thinking that causes us to want to harm one another. When we can be free from those thoughts, we free one another and we free the world.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that with me. And I love that through your own experiences, you can see that connection. Because I think sometimes that connection between your personal growth and the bit that you can add to support a future global peace just seems really opaque to people. And I can definitely see why. But once you start experiencing that in yourself and you start maneuvering your actions in different ways in your personal micro circle, you know, with your friends, with your family, you start seeing that. Imagine if more and more people just start working on releasing all of their cravings and fears and hatreds and, you know, all of their sort of clouded perceptions that are just keeping them away from really seeing reality as it is, then that's a massive, massive wave that can have a historical impact on humanity.
Yeah, when you quiet the wars inside your mind, the wars outside will follow.
Absolutely. Who's that?
Me.
Yeah,
that's my own line.
Gotta quote that one. That one's great.
You can take it. Take it. We can all. It belongs to everyone.
That's wonderful.
Truths are truths. We hope it's a truth. So, where do you see this movement going? I mean, there tends to be this focus on youth and, you know, the rise of the millennial, and you are a millennial and you're speaking to millennials, and I'm a slightly older generation, but we all go.
My name's Dwayne Osterlin. I'm host of the Addicted Mind podcast. Are you ready to uncover the science of breaking addiction? Then join me on the Addicted Mind, where compassion meets innovation. We're going to explore real stories of addiction recovery, hear from real experts on science-based treatment, and you'll be able to equip yourself with the tools for lasting change. So whether you're on the road to recovery yourself or walking alongside someone who is, the Addicted Mind podcast is your companion. So check it out. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now and be part of the conversation that's changing lives.
Okay, well, the millennials will save the world, or the millennials will be overly optimistic in thinking they can save the world. How do you see this youth movement arising or shifting or changing?
I mean, I think that's important. It's, if you look, examine history, it's often young people who are pushing that move and are making, you know, massive change. But I think, you know, age is important, but it's also just a matter of courage, because I've been a part of so many different campaigns and, you know, have hit the streets and like been out in rallies and marches and all of that. And every time I go out there, there's tons of young people, but there's also people of all ages, you know, so it's more so about who has been able to maintain that hope for change as opposed to, you know, just allowing the world to be what it is and not, you know, having the courage to really say, oh, well, we can do things in a better way. But I think we can really push things forward. And it's a process, you know, changing yourself with love is a long-term process. I think that's something that sort of, you know, doesn't really help the situation because people want change so immediately. I think, yeah. You know, we think about these times that we live in and there are times where everything is just so fast and moving so quickly and you want the most immediate results. And I think that's why a lot of people have difficulty with meditation, because they meditate a few times and then they don't quite see the changes when it's something that you have to put a certain degree of effort in to be able to get back what you put in. But over time, I think, you know, we're really going to see these changes and they sort of leak in. And I think that's, you know, we met at Wisdom 2.0 and I think that's something like that was so exciting for me because I'd never seen so many different sectors of society converge and people weren't just talking about problems, but people are literally like, I think, Tristan Harris, when he had his group, when he did his talk and he was talking about how, you know, the way we build our algorithms are just making us more addicted to the internet and our, you know, how companies are literally selling our attention and how that needs some sort of moralistic foundation to be able to, you know, it needs laws. It needs some type of maturity in that industry to not just like let tech do whatever it wants, because it could be really detrimental to the human experience. Not only did he talk about that, but after he talked about that, people literally broke out into groups and it was like hundreds and hundreds of people who were literally coming together with solutions and not people who were outside of the industry, people who are literally a part of that industry. So to me, that was pretty exciting that even happened. And those are little signs that when they happen over and over amount to big things, not just in tech, but in all industries.
So if somebody wants to make change in this world, and we all have aspirations too. But often people don't really know how or what or why. You feel like you want the world to be better. You're sitting here, you're probably working on yourself because you're listening to this podcast where we talk about working on ourselves in meditation. Yeah. So, you know, you're working on yourself. You hope the world would be better. How do you bridge that gap between you and the world when it can feel like it's easy to feel solutionless?
Oh, that gap is bridged through a community, right? So I think when we can feel that within ourselves that, oh, like I have enough energy to try to help, you know, engage with the world in a deeper way, to listen to more news, and not only to listen to the news, but try to be critical of what I'm receiving and then go out there and see what can I do. I think what's really special is that there are so many different movements out there, and those movements are created by people who are deeply touched by those issues. So I think it's really important to figure out what is the issue that most gets you excited, and to go out there and support that one so that you can help push it forward. And not only, you know, one thing that I think I used to see in the past was that people would sort of hold their issue on a pedestal as more important than others, but understanding that, yes, you can work on your issue, but also have understand it in an intersectional format, you know, that there's so many things that are affecting one another, that things are very sort of multifaceted and not as simple as, you know, once we fix this one thing, but it's actually a bunch of series of different things that we have to bring together to make a deep structural change in the world. But I would literally just encourage people to find something that meets them where they're at and something that really gets their interest going, and find a community that's already been working on it and try to plug yourself in.
So you have a lovely poem on heroes, which sort of dovetails here. A hero is one who heals their own wounds and shows others how to do the same.
Yeah, that one, that's an old one, actually. I think I wrote that maybe like 2016 or 2015. But I think it's, you know, basically the crux of what's happening now, especially in the wellness world, where people have really started going inward and found that you can actually make a difference inside of yourself. You know, you can like wage a campaign for a better life within yourself and win.
I love that.
And how, what are people doing? They're sharing. And I always, one of my favorite things to do is when I have events, I love just giving appreciation to yoga teachers, because they're literally like the forefront of this whole wellness world. Like I even would, you know, they're almost like the Marines of the wellness world. Like they're for a lot of people, they're the first people you encounter that, you know, sort of bring you inside yourself, get you in touch with your body, start getting you in touch with your mind, and sort of show you different avenues that you can explore to even deepen your understanding of yourself. And to me, I think that's quite powerful, because they're, you know, that now they're up in the numbers of millions and millions of yoga teachers out there than ever before. And obviously it has its, you know, upsides and downsides, but overall, I think it's a major upside that this is actually happening. And I think, you know, when I think of that poem, I think of these people who found something that has helped them and are now actively helping other people do the same, to heal those wounds and be able to move forward in a way that's much more gentle.
And if you had one piece of advice, one thought on how to heal the wounds, on how to move forward, what would it be?
Oh, I really encourage people to really find a technique. I think, whether it's some form of psychotherapy, whether it's a serious practice of yoga asanas, whether it's, you know, a form of meditation, and there are so many different forms of meditation, I think it takes a willingness to try and find something new, to really be able to get in touch with your mind so that it can settle down enough so that these patterns can start releasing. So I would really encourage finding something that meets you where you're at. And that really means finding something that is challenging to you, but not overwhelming. So you want to find that sweet spot, because the thing that challenges you will make you stronger. But if it's overwhelming, it might totally derail you and you won't necessarily want to keep going. So, you know, and it's a matter of like Googling and finding what your friends are doing and seeing what really resonates with you. But I really think that we each, you know, we have a technique that's out there waiting for us. And once we start applying it and putting effort into it, it can really transform our lives.
To liberate ourselves and liberate others.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for asking all the hard questions.
Thank you for having extraordinary answers and beautiful insights. It was really, really amazing.
Yeah, that was so much fun. We should do a part two someday.
I'm totally happy to. I'm very into the how to. Like, so how do people practically do this?
Yeah. I love how you said, like, versus the individual and the world. And then it was just like community, you know, what's there in the middle? And I think that's a big thing that we're learning, you know, in the internet age. Like, and it's so cool, you know, like how the internet is making more avenues for communities to appear in real life, which is pretty exciting.
Yes. And your point on go find something that meets you where you're at and you can start with, that's literally why we made Muse. It's a meditation tool that can teach anybody to meditate. You don't know what's going on in your mind here. Use this thing. It'll show you what to do. It'll hold your hand and it'll make it not scary.
Yeah, and that's wonderful. And I think that's why, you know, I'm a pretty serious meditator and I spend a lot of time meditating every day and all of that. But I know people have very different entry points. So I'm so grateful to, you know, Muse and like all the other things that are appearing now that are helping people who, you know, need a lower barrier to entry to be able to get into this world, because that's only going to just help them flourish. So thank you for doing what you do.
My pleasure. Thank all of us. So it's a very collective effort.
Absolutely.
And a path that seems so slow at times and so fast at times, you know, transformation. You can sit for hours, an individual can work for hours. I used to be a therapist, so I'd work with people for years. And you know, sometimes it just takes forever. And then all of a sudden there's the insight and the shift. And then from that, it's forever. And then another insight and shift. And then it can happen really quickly and slowly. So you know, the time course of these things can be unpredictable, which can be very frustrating, but also very inspiring when it all aligns.
That's so cool. So I just have a quick question. What meditation tradition do you personally practice in?
So I come from a broad range of experiences.
Yeah.
My own background is as a neuroscientist and a psychotherapist. Mm-hmm. Really just give people basic focused attention on the breath. At that point, I didn't have a meditation background. I was a therapist using tons of different therapy techniques. And then as I started down the path of building Muse, really when my meditation kind of mojo started kicking in. So now I experiment a wide, wide range. I'm in the midst of doing, do you know Jeffrey Martin and the Finders course? It's 26 different techniques to lead you to fundamental well-being.
Yeah, thank you so much. No, I'm always so curious about what people are doing. And I like to occasionally ask my audience, what has really helped you let go? And people have so many different things that they're putting out there. And it's so wonderful because, you know, and I really ask for the people who are new to this world without, you know, putting them on the spotlight, because then I can tell that a lot of people are reading and then they start asking each other questions about things that they will try in the future. So it's exciting to hear what actually works, you know?
So the one technique that I've recently used that's probably most effective and has led to the greatest liberation, and liberation is the term that I was using for myself when I was doing it, is like, whoa, I'm free. It's directly facing my fears. So it was based on exposure therapy. And in exposure therapy, when you find something that you find aversive, you instead move towards it and you spend time with it.
You feel the fear,
you experience that fear fully, you let it rise, you let it fall, and then at the end you realize you're still standing. And that's how you break through the fear. And from there, the fear starts to dissolve. And then I started applying that to everything I could think of in my life. Conversation that I was feeling like a little bit of hesitation, like, oh, should I say this thing? It's like, feel the fear, do it anyways. And that's become my mantra. Feel the fear, do it anyways. And anytime I find a little bit of resistance, Jung said, what we resist persists. And so if you can sit in that resistance, which is fear, and feel the fear, you can get to the other side. Because what we're afraid of is not the thing itself, it is the fear associated with it. Public speaking seems so impossible, not to you and I because we do it all the time, but to so many people, public speaking seems so impossible because you think about it and you get scared. And so you'll never do it because that layer of fear between you and it seems so big. You're not afraid of the public speaking. You're afraid of experiencing the fear associated with doing it. Not in a case where there's, you know, a true anaphylactic allergy. That's not what we're talking about. but all the places in our life where we have this built up resistance that causes our body to go into a flight or fight response.
That's amazing. Thank you for that gift. That's so well explained.
My pleasure. So I'm going to sign off in the way that you sign off in all of your Instagram posts where you begin, which is sending love to all beings. So I'm sending lots of gratitude to you for this talk and sending love to all beings.
Thank you so much. Yes, may we all be happy and free.
Indeed. Have a magnificent afternoon.
You too.
That was Diego Perez, aka Young Pueblo. You can find his poems daily on Instagram at Young Pueblo. That's YUNG_PUEBLO. Or find his published book, Inward, at your favorite bookseller. You can also find the video of our full interview, more than this, at arielgarten.com. That's me, arielgarten.com. And if you'd like to start or further your meditation practice, you can check out the award-winning app Meditation Studio in the App Store. Or you can get real-time feedback on your brain's activity while you meditate. Actually see what's going on in there using Muse. Muse is at choosemuse.com. And you can use the discount code UNTANGLE15. Patricia will be back next week with more Untangle. Until then, keep your neurons sparkling.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.